from Wondery, I'm Brooke Ziffrin.
And I'm Arisha Skidmore-Williams.
And this is Even the Rich. This week, I was supposed to be bringing you the story of screen siren Elizabeth Taylor.
But instead, we're doing an emergency Free Britney episode, where we're going to address some of the new developments in the conservatorship case of Britney Spears.
Yes, now as you probably know by now, Britney testified on her own behalf in open court last week, and she dropped some major bombshells about the legal arrangement that's controlled her life for more than a decade.
Yeah, there were some upsetting details, and it's been really scary to think about what Britney's been going through for all these years.
Now, we've already talked about the case a little bit on our new show, Rich and Daily.
Available wherever you get your podcasts.
But we wanted to talk to someone who really understands the case to help us get to the bottom of what's going on.
Right. So today, we're talking to lawyer Zoe Brennan-Crone about Britney's testimony, what conservatorships are even for, and how disabled people are uniquely affected.
Zoe Brennan-Crone is a staff attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union and a disability rights advocate.
Yeah, she's exactly who we need on Britney's side.
Hell yeah. Free Britney, bitch. Hi, Zoe. Thank you so much for being here with us today. There is obviously so much to talk about.
Yes. Great to be here.
Yeah. So we've covered Britney's testimony on our daily show, Rich and Daily, last week, but we really wanted to talk to an expert about the case.
Yeah. We definitely need someone to break things down for us and our Richies.
Okay. Happy to see what I can do.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to just jump right in. So Britney said a lot of shocking things in her testimony, but for me at least, the biggest bombshell was that she was forced to have an IUD inserted even though she wants to get married and have another kid. And worse, it turns out that it's completely legal. Can you talk a little bit about how that's even possible?
Yeah, sure. When a person is under a conservatorship or a guardianship, the court has taken away that person's right to make their own decisions about their life. And in many cases, that includes decisions about reproductive freedom. And so it appears that in this case, as in many conservatorships and guardianships, the court has given the power to make decisions about Britney's reproductive choices to her conservators.
So there were definitely some other jaw droppers. One thing that was crazy to me is that Britney said she felt like she was being sex trafficked because she had no control over her life. And, you know, as we all know, she'd been forced to work and had no input into how her money was spent. She even talked about being forced to take lithium because she objected to something her managers requested. Now, those seem like very extreme circumstances for someone to live under. What are some of the typical arrangements in conservatorships? Are these things normal?
One of the things that's really difficult about this area is that there's so little data and so little oversight. So we don't really know what's normal and what's not. But we have no idea what's happening because that's sort of built into conservatorships. And one of the real problems with them is that the control over your life, your body, your choices, how you spend your money, how you make your money is given to someone else. And there isn't much or any review of how the conservator is making those choices or what choices the conservator is making for you and about you.
Now, Zoe, just to make sure that we're all on the same page, can you explain specifically what is a conservatorship?
So a conservatorship is a system where a court takes away one person's right to make their own decisions about their body, about their life, about their money, and gives those choices to another person who's the conservator. And the court does that, in theory, based on a finding that the person is unable to provide for their own food, clothing, or shelter, or the person's a danger to themselves or to others. But it's a really extreme intervention, and it's really supposed to be an absolute last resort. But they really end up getting used as a first resort, and they're much, much easier to get into than to get out of. So you get a lot of people in situations that look like this, where you get into a conservatorship in some sort of moment of crisis or difficulty, and then it just goes on seemingly forever.
Yeah, and I mean, that's, you know, as a big Britney fan, I think that's what's most confusing to me about this is that, you know, yes, she did have a pretty public incident in 2007, and she was under a lot of stress. But, you know, now she's the center of this huge corporation that makes millions of dollars. She's released several albums, judged reality TV shows, had a Vegas residency, and raised two kids. So not only is she able to care for herself, she's caring for a lot of other people. So why isn't her massive career proof that she's doing fine? Like, is there a legal definition of competency that Britney hasn't met?
So we don't know the specifics of what's going on in her case. And we don't know whether she identifies herself as a person with disabilities, a person with psychiatric disabilities or not. Mm-hmm. But regardless of whether she perceives herself that way, you're right that she's incredibly successful, incredibly talented, making very large amounts of money. Mm-hmm. And those seem to be indications that she can and should be able to be making her own decisions. And that's true even if she does have a disability. Mm-hmm. One of the things that comes up a lot in talking about this case is that it looks from the outside like she may not have a disability at all. She may have had some type of crisis 13 years ago, is totally recovered. Maybe. Mm-hmm. Or maybe she has ongoing psychiatric disabilities. Who knows? But that by itself is not a reason to keep someone in a conservatorship. There's all sorts of ways that people can get support to bring themselves to a level of competence so that they don't need a conservator. And it really looks like that's something that would make a lot of sense for mm-hmm. someone like Britney. Most yeah. people who are very rich and famous have people who manage their money for them. And right, there's right. no particular reason that that would be through a conservatorship and going along with the loss of all of your autonomy and civil rights. She could just hire someone to manage her money for her, it seems.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, so knowing that conservatorships aren't supposed to go on forever and that Britney's been in hers for 13 years, can you talk some more about why there wasn't an end date for her case?
There's some types of them that are very specifically shorter term, like a temporary conservatorship or initial types of hold, like holds in a psychiatric situation. But very often conservatorships are sort of de facto permanent. They get reviewed maybe every year or on some regular basis, but there's a very strong presumption that they will continue. And there's a real catch-22 that people get caught in where if you go to the court and you're doing great and you've been under a conservatorship for a year, the judge might say, well, she's doing great. So why mess with something that's working well? And if you're not doing well, then for sure that's going to be used against you and used in favor of keeping the conservatorship forever. So you can really get in a position where no matter how you're doing, it's all used as evidence of why the conservatorship needs to continue.
Yeah, that's really frustrating. Can you just talk about who the typical conservatee is? Like, which people are most likely to be entered into these arrangements?
Yeah, so the most common populations of people under conservatorships and guardianships are people with intellectual and developmental disabilities, many of whom end up in conservatorships and guardianships right as they reach adulthood. Parents are sometimes told that they have to do that, which is often not the case. Then also people with psychiatric disabilities or right on the heels of some sort of psychiatric crisis end up in conservatorships and guardianships. And then people, older people who kind of age into disability, people with dementia, with Alzheimer's, with other kinds of age-related disabilities, also very often end up in conservatorships.
Yeah. So is it really true that Britney doesn't have her civil rights anymore? Like, can Britney vote? Does she still have a right to free speech?
So we don't know exactly. In California, there's a specific carve out to protect people's right to vote. So many people under conservatorships can still vote. But most of her other civil rights, she probably does not have. There's in the 80s, there was someone in Congress who referred to this process as being a civil death. And that's really, really right on, that she those rights are not hers anymore. They're held by her conservator.
Yeah. I'm wondering, is there a scenario where they could really force her to be sterilized?
A conservator would have to go through a specific process in order to permanently and involuntarily sterilize a conservatee. Which is meant to be a protective mechanism because that's such a huge deal.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I think being forced to use a extremely effective birth control method through your reproductive years is not functionally that different. IUDs are very effective at preventing pregnancies, and if she is not able to have it removed at a certain point, she will, you know, no longer be of reproductive age, and it will functionally be very, very similar.
That's a really good point. So switching gears a little bit, from our reporting, we also know that Brittany doesn't even have a say in who her lawyers are, and that there was a time when she tried to hire one, but the judge told her that she couldn't. And even if we think that Brittany needs help to manage her affairs, why doesn't she at least get a say in how that happens?
It's a really good point. She absolutely should. I don't know what happened in leading the judge to say that the lawyer who she had chosen was not the lawyer that the judge was going to appoint. But I think one of the really important things that comes up on this matter and other parts of this case is that the idea of capacity is really, really often misperceived as a sort of black and white issue, like you either have it or you don't. And that's just not how humans are. You know, there's all sorts of things that, you know, I don't have capacity to make an informed decision about right now. At this moment, I could get help to bring myself to capacity to make a big medical decision or sign a mortgage or something, but I couldn't do it right now.
Right.
And that's the same for people with disabilities. And also that some decisions are higher stakes than others and require more complexity than others. And the decision about being able to say, I trust this person to help me through this process, I want this person to be my lawyer, is really something that she very likely had capacity to do, even if she had a lot of significant difficulties at that time, even if she needed support to do a lot of things, whatever was going on at that moment, you know, assuming that person is a lawyer, is competent to do this. It's, you know, if she was saying, I want Mickey Mouse to be my lawyer, maybe you'd say, whoa, I'm not sure about this. But if she's saying, I want this person who's a lawyer who does conservatorship work in California, where I am, that seems like a really problematic thing for a judge to be overriding. And I think that things like that often happen because there's this sense that if you're quote unquote incapacitated, there's nothing you can do. And that's a really problematic view of humans and especially of humans with disabilities.
I mean, that's just something that sticks out to us for sure, is that, you know, Brittany's footing the bill for pretty much everything on both sides of the case. So she's paying for her own court-appointed lawyer, plus the legal bills for her father's attorneys and everyone else involved in the case. I mean, how does that not present a conflict of interest?
Yeah, it presents a huge conflict of interest, and it makes it very hard to trust that everyone is making clear-eyed decisions based on really what's best for Brittany. There is some oversight and there is some reporting, particularly of the financial aspects of it, that goes to the court on some regular basis. But I think in a lot of cases, almost anything will get sort of rubber stamped. And so particularly where there's so much money involved, as there is here, I think it's really something that's very troubling. How do you separate out the decisions you're making, you know, between what's good for Brittany and what's good for you?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, as you said, money's a huge factor. It's hard not to think that all these men see Brittany as a cash cow. Like Jamie, her father, said that Brittany is, quote, a racehorse who has to be handled like one. Mm. How can we trust that Jamie and his lawyers aren't just trying to keep their hands in Brittany's money?
It's very hard to know how to put safeguards on a system that is giving them so much power. The person who is best situated to say whether this is working for them or not, whether they want it or not, is Britney Spears. And she does not have much or any say in this. And that's really deeply troubling. Even people with significant disabilities, whether or not Britney is one of those people, have preferences and have wishes. And those wishes and that self-determination should be respected and should be taken really seriously. And that does not seem to be the case for Brittany and is not the case for hundreds of thousands of people in conservatorships and guardianships across the country.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank?
Literally always.
Okay. Well, the new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look, and it comes in luxe gold packaging. It feels incredibly high-end, but it is a lot more affordable.
Oh, yeah. The Panorama Mascara lives up to its name by giving your lashes panoramic volume and a fully fanned-out look. Its tapered mascara wand catches every single lash, including those hard-to-reach corner lashes.
When I do wear makeup, I do the bare minimum, and that's usually eyeliner and mascara and lip gloss. Yeah. And so mascara has to really pop.
Yes.
And let me tell you, L'Oreal, this baby pops.
Yeah. I do love the packaging. Like, I'm all about that.
So if you're looking for an affordable mascara that gives you voluminous, lengthened lashes, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
So as a listener of Even the Rich, you know that audio piques the imagination, which is why we're so excited for Audible's new collection of exclusive thrillers. They feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances that really bring the story to life.
Oh, yeah. The next listen on my list is the psychological thriller, The Silent Patient.
Ooh.
So it's all about a therapist who tries to unravel the mystery of a woman who refuses to talk or give any explanation as to why she shot her husband. I mean, it's going to be the perfect binge listen, and you know I love my thrillers.
I can agree. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog.
Yeah, new members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/eventherich or text eventherich to 500-500.
That's audible.com/eventherich or text eventherich to 500-500 to get started.
So earlier you mentioned that conservatorships are usually just for people with dementia or psychiatric or developmental disabilities, basically people who might never be able to manage their own affairs. Can you talk a little bit about why Brittany was ever considered eligible for something so severe?
Yeah, although I would say that there are a lot of people under conservatorships and guardianships who do not need to be under them. And I think that people who do have disabilities, where it's clear that they have a disability, does not automatically mean that you need a conservatorship or a guardianship by any means. And if you don't have a disability, you are free to make less than great choices in your early adulthood. And people might advise you otherwise, but nobody's coming in to say, I'm taking away all of your civil rights. But if you have a disability, or if you're perceived to have a disability, that's exactly what happens. So I think it seems like that's what happened in this case. And that then the sort of system can go into place where you're not allowed to make any mistakes. Any mistake you make is used against you for the rest of your life. And that's a unique level of scrutiny that's faced only by people who are disabled or perceived to be disabled.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought this topic up because, you know, I've seen a lot of information floating around about how conservatorships are used to control disabled people specifically. And you're a disability rights advocate. Can you explain why the disabled are so vulnerable to having their civil rights just stripped away from them?
Yeah. I mean, I think the vulnerability really comes from society. It's not from the people themselves. It's from our society, which views people with disabilities with extraordinary paternalism and often as sort of perpetual children. And conservatorships and guardianships do sort of almost recreate a parent-child relationship with an adult, where the person under conservatorship is limited in many ways the way a child would be. And that is very consistent with these very sort of stereotypical views that a lot of people have of people with disabilities as being like children, as not being fully human, as not being as worthy. And I think that makes it much easier for us as a society to let this happen. There's this sort of idea that conservatorships are a sort of benign intervention to help people who can't help themselves. And that's a really deeply patronizing and problematic view, that people can have significant disabilities, use significant supports, rely on people, as we all do, as people without disabilities do too, of course. None of us are really living independently. We all live interdependent lives. But some types of interdependence are normalized and some are not. So I think this sort of perception that people with disabilities are less autonomous individuals makes it easier for us to accept something like this, that if it happens to someone who's not disabled, we would be shocked by it. And I think that's part of why the Britney Spears case is so resonant, that people don't perceive her, don't think of her as being disabled the way they might think of someone with an intellectual disability as being disabled. So it feels much more jarring because she's not quite in that category in most people's sort of minds.
So, Zoe, I saw a TikTok last week that pointed out that some of the conversation about Britney and disability rights was focused on the wrong question. Basically, it said that instead of being upset that Britney is being treated this way as a disabled person, we're upset that she's not disabled enough to be treated this way. Can you talk a little bit about some of the ways disabled people are presumed to be unable to take care of themselves? Like, how often do they lose their rights like this?
Yeah, I do think it's a really important point that there is a question of, you know, does she have a disability? And if she doesn't have a disability, she shouldn't be in a conservatorship. Sure. Mm-hmm. But if she does have a disability, she still probably shouldn't be in a conservatorship. And that's the much more common reality across the country of people who do have disabilities, maybe even significant disabilities, but still are totally unnecessarily in conservatorships and guardianships, because there's this enormous range of voluntary, less restrictive supports that people with disabilities can use that don't involve the court taking away all of your rights, that don't involve somebody else profiting off of this situation, that are less intrusive, less permanent, and that those are very often overlooked or not recognized by courts. People who aren't perceived to be disabled, who rely on supports of some sort, are considered smart. If I decide to buy a house, I live in San Francisco, I'll never buy a house, but if I decided to buy a house and didn't live in San Francisco, I would talk to people to make sure I understood the terms of the mortgage and what you do to buy a house, and that would be considered really good choice, that I'm not just signing things without knowing what they are. But if a person with a disability or perceived to have a disability says, hey, I'm having trouble understanding this, can I get some help with it? That's automatically used against them. That's something that they're doing wrong. And that's just such an unnecessary double standard.
And I mean, we talked about just how severe it is to take away a person's choice to have kids. Like, it's such a personal choice, you would think that should lie with the person themselves. And in a blog post on the ACLU website, you wrote a piece called Britney Spears' Reproductive Freedom is a Disability Rights Issue. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, I think one piece of why this is a disability rights issue, I mean, the most basic, is that Britney's choice is being denied solely because she's in the system of conservatorship, which she's in based on a perceived disability. So this would only happen because of her perceived disability. But there's also this enormous history of people with disabilities, primarily Black and brown and poor people with disabilities, being involuntarily sterilized because of their disabilities and because of eugenics, pure and simple. And that was upheld in a Supreme Court opinion written by Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes. And tens of thousands of people in the U.S. were forcibly sterilized in the 20th century, many of them still alive today, because of disabilities. So it's an issue with a really terrible and recent history. So it's of particular importance in the disability community because it's been so frequently taken away.
In Britney's testimony, when she talked about having the IUD, she also mentioned wanting to get married. And it made me wonder, is being in a relationship an odd thing? Are most conservatives allowed to have a relationship? Or is this another thing that makes Britney's conservatorship different?
So many or most conservators and guardians do have the power to decide if someone can get married or not. And that's very, very problematic because, again, that's a huge, really important choice that's really core to a person's identity. And unless there's a very specific reason, that is something that you would want the conservator to very, very rarely intervene with. And again, people with and without disabilities are in a whole range of intimate relationships, sexual relationships, personal relationships, families. Like, there's the whole gamut of relationships that people have, many of which are very healthy and loving, some of which are less so. But being in a conservatorship is often used as a license to prevent people from seeing partners or from having partners, and in a way that is very problematic and very over expansive in a lot of cases.
So is that something then that becomes a conflict of interest if the conservatee has a new next of kin, basically? Like, would Britney's husband legally be able to have a say in her conservatorship?
It's a really good question. It is a conflict of interest, I think. And again, all of this is so high stakes in cases where there's a lot of money involved, as there is here. But there are many conservatorships, particularly of older people, where there is quite a bit of money at stake and these conflicts come up. But I think just given the very broad loss of rights, including typically the loss of the right to contract, that there would be reasons. They would have arguments that they could probably make to try to stand in the way of that.
Yeah. So all of these restrictions around reproduction make it seem like, sadly, society thinks disabled people are somehow inherently unfit to have children just because they're disabled. Can you talk about how that idea shows up in the law and why it's so damaging?
Yeah, it shows up in a lot of ways. And some of them are in the law that, you know, that a person under conservatorship or guardianship often does not have the right to make their own choices about reproductive freedom. It also shows up in practice a lot, even if a person is not under conservatorship, not under guardianship, that disabled people go to the hospital to have a child and have to fight with social services to take that child home with them. People who are blind, people who have physical disabilities, people who have intellectual disabilities, that there's a very strong societally created response that many medical professionals have, that people with disabilities can't be parents, and that by virtue of giving birth and being blind, that we need to call social services and get to the bottom of this. And that's extremely traumatic for people and really based on stereotypes. It's very deeply sort of baked into society to think of disability as being a reason that a person can't make their own decisions in a wide variety of contexts, including about parenting.
Well, from everything we've learned about Britney's conservatorship, it seems like the whole system is pretty much set up to be abused. Can you talk a little bit about some of the ethical gray areas that come up in conservatorships?
Yeah, I think you're right that it's really set up for abuse. And I think I really view there being sort of two types of harms that you see a lot in conservatorships and guardianships. And one of them is outright abuse, a conflict of interest, you know, and using the conservatorship for financial gain or any number of ways where the conservator is really not doing what they think is best for the person, but is taking advantage of it. Because of the lack of data, we have no idea how often that happens, but that absolutely is a reality. And I think especially so in cases where there's a lot of money at stake. But then there's also a type of harm from conservatorships and guardianships where even if everyone is doing their best and everyone is making the choices that they perceive to be the choices that are best for the person under conservatorship or guardianship, that there's still real harms and risks from being in that system. And so there are many, many conservatorships and guardianships where everyone involved is deeply loving and deeply committed to the person. And I want to be really clear about that people make very hard decisions with absolute best of intentions in many cases. But that even in those cases, I think that there should be more consciousness of what are the risks and benefits of this? What's the particular problem that you're trying to solve with a conservatorship or a guardianship? You know, if it's just this person has a disability, that's not a problem to solve. That's just a reality of life. And if there is a particular thing that you would want people to really think through, okay, well, are there other ways we could deal with this? Is a power of attorney an option? You know, is a healthcare directive? There's all sorts of other things that are less dramatic, less intrusive, less permanent than a conservatorship.
So on that note, are there any ways that conservatorships can be good? Do they ever actually make things better?
So I'm sure there are individual cases where, yes, people do well in conservatorships. And you know, the idea of them is supposed to be a sort of protective, not permanent mechanism. I think in a lot of those cases, there's still the question of, did that need to happen via conservatorships? Like, there's a lot of conservatorships that, in reality, people are doing great and people are you know, able to maximize their independence, are able to get lots of support, are able to move towards more and more autonomy. But there's still a question in a lot of those cases of, do you need to have this really invasive mechanism to do that?
Life is busier than ever. It might be harder to find time these days to grocery shop, prep, and cook healthy and hearty meals. I get it. But Factor's got you covered.
Yeah, so Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, delivered right to your door, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes.
Exactly. And Factor is tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. If you're traveling or still finishing up last week's meals, you can always pause or reschedule deliveries.
I mean, I know I've talked before about how much I love Factor because it's just so easy.
And it doesn't taste like, you know, the microwavable yes. meals you see, especially in rom-coms when we're trying to heighten and highlight how sad and pathetic this woman's life is.
Yeah.
They don't taste like that. They taste so good as if you made them yourself or hired a chef. Head to factormeals.com/rich50 and use code rich50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box. That's code rich50 at factormeals.com/rich50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
We all face stress in our daily lives. What if the answer to a better stress response is in one key nutrient? I'm talking about magnesium, and specifically Magnesium Breakthrough by Optimizers. This one-of-a-kind product is designed to reverse low levels of magnesium, which could have a positive effect on our stress response. But don't take my word for it. Here's a quote from a 2020 issue of the scientific journal Nutrients. Results suggest that stress could increase magnesium loss, causing a deficiency. And in turn, magnesium deficiency could enhance the body's susceptibility to stress, resulting in a magnesium and stress vicious circle. I only recommend Magnesium Breakthrough by Optimizers. It's the only organic full-spectrum magnesium supplement that includes 7 unique forms of magnesium for stress resilience and better sleep. Simply go to bioptimizers.com/ifstories. Promo code IFSTORIES10 to get your magnesium breakthrough and find out this month's gift with purchase. That's bioptimizers.com/IFSTORIES. Promo code IFSTORIES10.
In the documentary Framing Britney Spears, a lawyer said that she's never seen anyone successfully exit a conservatorship. And Zoe, I'm wondering, is this the same case for you? Have you ever seen a conservatorship successfully end? And why is it so hard for people to get out of them?
So I have seen some conservatorships end, primarily because when I'm working on conservatorship cases, that's the only kind of thing I'm doing in them. That's my... I'm a disability rights lawyer. I don't help people get into conservatorships as a general matter. I work to try to get people out of them. So it does happen sometimes, but it's very, very difficult. And I think part of it is this sort of presumption of conservatorships as being benign and as being neutral, and this sort of idea that if things are going along okay, why mess with something? This seems fine. We'll just keep going. And the answer of why mess with it is that civil rights matter and choices matter. And if you're doing fine in this extremely intrusive, invasive, like civil death, then keeping it or getting rid of it are not equally good options. That there should be a real presumption in favor of lifting a conservatorship unless there's an absolute reason to keep it. But in fact, mm-hmm. it's the opposite.
Yeah. So one of Britney's big requests during her testimony was to be let out of the conservatorship without another evaluation. And everything we've read says that that's not very likely to happen. Could you explain to us why?
Yeah, I do. Typically to get out of a conservatorship, the court would have to see, or most judges would want to see, evidence that the person no longer meets the criteria of it. Mm-hmm. And I think that the presumption should be set up that it's the burden on the conservator to show why the person still needs it, rather than the other way around. But it is very often that if you want to get out of a conservatorship, you have to show that you should get out of the conservatorship. So typically that does involve some sort of evaluation. if I were representing Britney Spears, I would probably try to work with her to have an evaluation that was functional, that's not just sort of go sit in this room with a stranger and answer a bunch of questions or this sort of scary, confusing, stressful, traumatic experience, that, you know, the type of evaluations you can use can be much more practical. Like what, you know, someone talking through, how would you figure out how to manage your money? And would you have, you know, an accountant help you work, you know, figure out your finances and make decisions based on that or things like that. So I don't think it would have to be an evaluation in the like very clinical abstract sense, which sort of sounds like is what she's talking about. But it would be hard to go in cold just on her 2 feet and say, I want to get out and you should let me out.
Touching on that, an NPR piece last week quoted you as saying, once a court has put a person under a conservatorship, only a court can lift that conservatorship. What would a court be looking for to feel sure that dissolving the conservatorship was truly in Britney's best interest?
You know, it varies by the judge. It's part of what people don't always know going into conservatorships, that you can't just get out of them by walking away. And I think part of the challenge of it is that courts don't always know exactly what they're looking for, because it's pretty rare for people to get out of it. And that it shouldn't be a requirement that the decisions a person makes are the absolute, you know, best decisions in this some sort of abstract way. Those of us not under conservatorships are all free to make less than great decisions. And that's part of, you know, what we think of as being human. That's important to our sense of identity, that we can, you know, eat more ice cream than we should or do all sorts of things that if you said, like, is this in your best interest? Well, no, but that's important to being human. So you would want a court to be looking at, you know, can this person use supports and make decisions that we consider the kind of decisions that people are free to make as adults? But in fact, what courts tend to look for are, you know, is this person making, you know, truly the best, most saint-like decisions at every turn? And
right,
most of us wouldn't really survive that criteria, right?
No, yeah. Not even in an hour.
So Zoe, just to wrap things up, now that Britney's been able to say her piece, what are her next steps? What does she actually have to do to have the conservatorship dissolved?
So a person under conservatorship can file a petition to have the conservatorship terminated. Honestly, I think in a situation where someone has told the court that in very clear terms that she wants to get out, that you would actually want the judge to proactively do something, to say, whoa, okay, we've got this person who's been in a conservatorship for 13 years and has now said, it feels abusive, there are things I don't want to be doing, and I want out of this. That you could have a judge proactively say, okay, let's figure this out. Let's have a hearing on this. Let's ask her if she wants to file a petition, what lawyer she wants to help her file that petition, etc. But the procedural piece is that it would be a petition, there would be evidence, and then there could be essentially a whole trial on this issue, witnesses and everything.
So, Zoe, that's all we have for today. Is there anything about Britney's conservatorship that we didn't cover that you think is important to mention?
I don't think so. I think this was really fun, and I think we covered a lot of the big issues.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you so much really for joining us. It.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks again to Zoe for joining us today.
Yes, God, I feel like I learned so much about the case, but also about how difficult the law makes things for disabled people.
I know, I had no clue, and I'm so glad we were able to talk with her.
And there will probably be more developments in the story now that we know the Free Britney movement was right the entire time. So we'll definitely revisit this when that happens. In fact, after we recorded this interview last week, the judge in Britney's case denied her request to remove her father Jamie from control of her conservatorship. And Bessemer Trust, the company that was going to co-manage her money, asked to be removed from the case entirely, citing Britney's testimony. So this is for sure a developing story.
Yeah, we're not stopping till she's free. I'm Arisha Skidmore Williams.
And I'm Brooke Ziffrin. This episode was produced by Natalie Shisha and Kate Young. Our audio engineer is Sergio Enriquez. Our executive producers are Stephanie Jens, Jenny Lauer-Beckman, and Marsha Louie for Wondery.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.